SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Monday. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid for this February the 15th, 2021. As we get ready to recap fantasy, reality, sports wagering, everything that we do here on the show after a week off, I am back with you guys now to get you ready for the baseball season, fantasy baseball season. And I'm bringing along my new partner here on the show and want to introduce everyone to you. You know him, of course, very well here from Sports Grid and the network. His name is Davis Maddock. You follow him, of course, on Twitter. All of his rumblings, grumblings, and everything that's going on in his world of fantasy sports and wagering. And Davis, it is great to have you here. You and me every day for the next 2 hours. We're going to get into it, and it's great to see you on this Monday. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Had a good weekend full of lots of sports. There was just, you know, so much stuff to watch. We have so many leagues going on concurrently. Kind of a benefit of the coronavirus pandemic. Our schedule is just packed full of all the sports that you could want. So very excited to get into it with you today.
Yeah, and Davis and I will be here every day. And Davis, of course, has a keen eye for golf and NASCAR and all the sports that I don't really watch that much. So it's great to have him here. Of course, we'll cover baseball and fantasy baseball for you coming up a little bit later. We'll talk about the trade of Andrew Benintendi as he goes to Kansas City and everything going on in the hot stove. I'll have my updates for you, as I always do here on the show as well. But before we go any further, let's get to our headlines from the weekend in fantasy sports and wagering as well. And no doubt we start off with the Daytona 500, which they should call the 500 hours of Daytona. Man, that thing started in the day and it did not end to the night. It was rain delayed. It was exciting at the end, no doubt, ending in a caution, but Michael McDowell ends up winning. I believe he was 100-1, so the books really did well this weekend with a huge dog end up coming in first at the Daytona 500. Also, Daniel Berger wins at Pebble Beach. We'll ask Davis about that. The AT&T Pro-Am, Jessica Pegula, advances to the Australian Open quarterfinals. If her name sounds familiar, she's the daughter of Buffalo Bills owners Terry and Kim Pegula, so congratulations to her as well. Last night, Blazers survive in Dallas. Mavericks not having the best season, that's for sure. 121-118, and the news, unfortunately, not as good for Anthony Davis, who left in the second half due to an Achilles injury, and it does appear that this could be extended time, Davis, for AD, Anthony Davis. And look, this has kind of been the story, unfortunately, throughout his career. Last year, with the regular season in the bubble, AD sort of put it all together and was no doubt more than Robin to LeBron's Batman, right? Like, he was great last year down the stretch and in the finals. But it does seem to me that even though the injury may not be super serious, Davis, we could be looking at, I don't know, I'm just guessing here, a week, 2 weeks, maybe even longer than that, because the Lakers are very good and they're going to be needing him in the playoffs for sure.
I mean, they should, I think, probably rest him for a good chunk of time. Achilles injuries are no jokes. We saw this with Kevin Durant back in his last finals as a member of the Golden State Warriors. He suffers the Achilles injury. He comes back because it's the NBA Finals. He wants to play. And, you know, ever since then, it's kind of been the rumor that the team pushed him back and he didn't really want to play and he felt pressured. And you know, that kind of led to the divorce between Durant and the Warriors. And you know, I think that in terms of the regular season, I don't imagine really that the Lakers are going to have too much trouble, you know, securing the one seed, the two seed. Like, they will get a favorable home court advantage playing Montrezl Harrell and Markieff Morris in those minutes. So they should, I think, keep Anthony Davis out for quite some time as opposed to rushing back, because he's kind of a fragile guy anyways. You know, this is the Anthony Davis right. Leaves to the locker room bit that just plays out in real time.
And there's also a story today developing that Andre Drummond, who's had a great season for Cleveland, looks like he's not going to be playing for the foreseeable future, as the Cavs, Davis, look like they could end up moving him, which does make sense. And I think that most people saw this coming, but it's really important from a wagering and DFS point of view for those people who've been riding Drummond over the last couple of months. You got to sit him down here. There's a report about possibly the Raptors getting him.
Yeah, and I think he makes sense for the Raptors. You know, they're giving all those minutes to Aron Baynes, and you know, we have guys like though I would hate that for the Raptors personally, because that would mean that Chris Boucher would probably go from playing 25 minutes a night to playing like 18 minutes a night. Boucher is a guy I would love to see just like add 10 pounds and play more center. I was kind of going through some of the potential destinations. I actually think the Celtics make a ton of sense, not contract wise, because the Celtics don't have a ton of movable contracts, but just replacing those Tristan Thompson 24 minutes a night with Andre Drummond, I think makes their offense so much better, because Tristan is just, he's a total zero on offense for them right now, the way that it works. But also a bummer for Cavs fans, because they were kind of fun, right? You know, you got Garland, you got Sexton, Okoro has played horribly so far, but they were kind of fun. And now it's just going to be a lot of pretty boring basketball. I guess we get to see more JaVale McGee, which is always funny.
Yeah, and look, Sexton's had a nice year for sure, no doubt. Did you watch what did you watch in between the beginning of the Daytona and the end? Anything good? Because it was like a million hours yesterday.
Yeah, I was mostly watching the golf yesterday. I was watching Daniel Berger win on Pebble, watch some of the Premier League soccer. There were a couple good matches yesterday that didn't have the attention span to sit there and watch all the rain delays. And then, you know, of course, some of the basketball games as well. You just throw on League Pass and you kind of cycle through. There were a couple decent games yesterday, including the Bucks, you know, just playing another horrible game, another bad regular season game from the Bucks against the Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, just getting tested by these bottom of the barrel teams and eventually losing.
Yeah, and that's been happening for the Bucks now for 2 years, and even in the playoffs last year at the end. I think that cost them not playing well in the regular season too. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, speaking of the NBA, it's fantasy standout time. We'll bring in our producer Brett Levy, Craig Mish, Davis Maddock. We're back on Fantasy Sports Today after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mitch, along with David Maddock, for the next 2 hours, talking fantasy sports with you, wagering, of course, as well. Adam Ronis will be with us in the second hour of the show. We'll hit on some NBA tonight, and we'll look at that. We'll also ask Davis his opinion if he likes any of the games as well. All right, time for our fantasy standouts from Sunday night in the NBA. As always, we bring in our producer, Brett Levy, to join me and Davis here on the show. Before we do that, let me give them to you here on the program. Here are the fantasy standouts from Sunday. Bradley Beal in a big win for the Wizards, coming off a day off for him, shockingly. 35 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. He's had a great year. DeJounte Murray, 26 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 steals for the Spurs. I'm not sure the Spurs were playing up against anybody last night. Everybody was sitting in that game, but they ended up getting the win. Rozier was the beneficiary to that. 33 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. Mason Plumlee, 17 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Yes, that is a triple-double. And a nice night for Zion with 26 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 blocks. And as we welcome in our producer, Brett Levy, along with Davis Maddock, Bradley Beal, a big win for Washington yesterday. I guess, Brett, in some ways, a little bit of a surprise beating the Celtics and beating them pretty handily as well.
Yeah, I mean, he played well. I thought the Wizards looked pretty good. And these type of things happen from time to time where a team gets a win that no one really sees coming. Sometimes it's, you know, these bench guys are given an opportunity to get out on the court and they want to prove that they deserve a contract for next year. So they have to perform well in their limited opportunities. And you know, Avija played pretty good off the bench as well. He didn't score a bunch, but he rebounded from the guard spot. So the Wizards had some key contributions from some key spots, and that helped them get over the hump.
Davis, did anybody play yesterday for Charlotte? I saw like everybody out, more or less. That's probably why they got smashed.
Man, they were super thin, but I gotta say, I am just so impressed with LaMelo Ball. You know, I think that a lot of people were skeptical, and I think the reasons they were skeptical didn't have anything to do with how LaMelo played before he entered the NBA. I literally think it's because his brother has just not lived up to expectations in the NBA. You know, a big part of that Anthony Davis trade, and really has just never found his shooting stroke as a member of the New Orleans Pelicans. But I mean, I'm trying to be long on LaMelo Ball every way I can, you know, buying his top shots, buying his physical sports cards, playing him every night in DFS. You know, we see his price on FanDuel and all the other DFS sites. Just, you know, he's not quite there to that elite tier range. And what I think is so impressive about LaMelo is kind of like Russell Westbrook. He is an amazing rebounder. He has over 10 rebounds in each of his last two games, and like they're playing without a power forward right now. They played Miles Bridges at power forward yesterday, and they're not missing a beat rebounding because LaMelo is so good at it.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, Davis, that with the I feel like I'm very caught up on everything memorabilia wise, sports cards wise, but this Top Shots is just escaping me. Like, I totally get it, I understand it, I know what's going on, but I have yet to dive into it. Because this concept just doesn't work for me. I understand that they're selling for crazy money and nobody can get these top shots. I completely get it and I understand. And making sense of anything that's going on, by the way, right now in sports cards is really hard to do. But, Davis, have you been able to actually purchase any of these? Like, everyone is complaining all the time that nobody can get any.
Yeah, so I got in, I mean, quote-unquote early, you know, pretty much immediately after Jonathan Bales had his post on his Substack. Right. I started picking up a bunch of moments. I have sold some of my moments, and honestly, actually, if I could buy them back for the prices they sold at right now, I would, holding a bunch of other stuff. They've done a lot of work on the website. I mean, you guys have worked in tech and on supply side stuff. Yeah, like, sure. There's nothing more miserable than running a website and having, you know, 100x your expected traffic come in overnight because all the processes you have set in place just aren't going to work. And that's kind of where they're at in the beta stage right now. But I have been able to get in, have been able to get some packs. So maybe my positive feelings are just that I've had a positive experience with it, whereas I know a lot of other people have been very frustrated with, you know, the maneuverability.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I see online is I don't see anybody ever saying a good thing about it. All I see is everyone says, darn, I didn't get it. I feel like it's like a PS5 or something like that. I'm going to have to figure this out because as much as I am into cards, I am not on the Top Shots. I just can't understand how it's a moment that I could get on YouTube, but another story. All right, fantasy standouts also from the later games. Dame Lillard, 34 points, 3 rebounds, 11 assists, and 1 steal. Luka with not a good game, not a great game, a monster game. 44 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists for him. Speaking of which, could Giannis do any better? I'm not sure. 24, 17, 10, 3 steals and 3 blocks. LeBron James, 22 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, and 1 block, just 1 shy of another triple-double for him. Speaking of which, the Joker had 23 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists, and 1 block. And Brett, you know, a little bit later, we're going to bring in Adam Ronis. We're going to talk about the possible MVP odds, which I'm sure everyone knows by now LeBron James is the favorite here. But the other guys are on our screen right now, Brett. We're looking at them. Jokic, LeBron, Giannis, and Luka. And LeBron's the favorite. And Brett, I would guess that if the Lakers keep winning without AD, this is like a done deal.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with AD's MRI today. But I actually told Joe last week when you were gone, Craig, that I don't think the Lakers were anticipating riding, you know, their 36-year-old as much as they are this year to all these victories. I think they were probably hoping their 27-year-old would be the one that would carry them through the bulk of the regular season. But LeBron's been incredible this year. He was a point, again, assist away from a triple-double last night. So he's definitely the front runner. And you said it, if AD is out, he's definitely going to have to carry more of that Lakers scoring load, and he'll probably continue to be one of their lead facilitators, and he might even have to play power forward for them, play up a little bit, so maybe his rebounding jumps a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, but he hasn't missed a game yet, so it'll be really interesting to keep our eye on LeBron and see if everything holds up. He invests more in his body than like any other athlete on the planet. So maybe he is just built for this, Craig.
Davis, Luka with another 60 plus night again on FanDuel in DFS, but the team is not as good as I think some people thought. What are they missing?
No, they suck. there's really no other way. There's really no other way to say it. And you know what? I mean, look at the guys they're playing, and it doesn't really. It's not that hard to be like, well, no wonder. So first off, is because of the very specific weaknesses that Luka has, they have to play a specific type of player alongside him. They got to give Dorian Finney-Smith a lot of minutes. They got to give Josh Richardson a lot of minutes because those guys are going to handle, guarding Damian Lillard. Guarding Gary Trent Jr., who is having, a transcendent season compared to what we expected from him. And also, Porzingis is kind of that same very specific player where he's, a very good offensive player, but he is not a good rebounder for a big guy, doesn't really want to get his elbows dirty, down there in the paint. And kind of the thesis behind playing Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleba and Josh Richardson a bunch of minutes is that they're going to be able to hit three-pointers. But as a team, the Mavericks are like, they're hitting like 32% of their three-pointers as a team. They're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the NBA. This Josh Richardson addition was supposed to fix some of those problems, and he just hasn't hit his shot. So if you have a bunch of 3-and-D guys who are missing the threes, what are you supposed to do?
Not much. Real quick, Brett, before we let you go here for the day, well, Brett's gone already. He's got to produce the show, so that's just the breaks here, Davis. We only get Brett for about 8 minutes a show, and then that's basically it. But coming up next, we will dive into some more odds over on FanDuel, Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals. I know that we are closing in on spring training, and those of you who are tuning into the show expecting a lot of baseball talk throughout spring training and into the season, you're absolutely going to get it. We're working on some unbelievable things for you for March, leading up to the season, having a lot of the general managers from Major League Baseball join us here on the show live and get you ready for the fantasy baseball season. So lots of great stuff in store, no doubt. But we'll kick around some more NBA because pitchers and catchers aren't there yet. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, welcome back to Fantasy Sports. Today here on Sports Grid, Craig Mish, Davis Maddock here every day from noon to 2 Eastern right here on the grid. Welcome back. Happy Monday to all of you who are back with us. I was off a week after the Super Bowl. Very nice. Taking a little bit of time off to chill, but I am back here and ready to dive into the market over on FanDuel. And I think FanDuel, Davis, has some money to give away after yesterday's debacle at the Daytona 500 debacle. Why? Who wins 100-1? That's what happened yesterday. So I'm sure that there were a couple of people that were very happy, but overall, that's a good day for the books when a long shot like that ends up coming in, unless there's somebody that I'm missing out there that put a nice mill on this guy who won the Daytona yesterday. So Davis, if you wouldn't mind, let's take a look at the Eastern Conference in the NBA and something that we'll do weekly. We'll check the markets and see where they are. And in your opinion, let's see if we can get ahead of this a little bit. We still have some months to go here, even before the playoffs. So right now the Nets are plus 165. I believe Durant may miss a couple of games here coming up. We know it's been a sort of in and out season for him, but they are the favorites despite the lack of defense. The Bucks are plus 260 with Giannis. They would be the clear favorite had it not been for them falling apart last year in the playoffs, I think. Sixers still at 6-1, despite their great start to the season. Maybe they're kind of looking at last year too. They started off pretty well, and then also in the bubble didn't fare pretty well. Celtics sitting steady at 7.5-1. FanDuel is still in on the Heat at 12-1. They've had probably one of the bigger disappointing starts to their year for sure. And then Davis, we got the Raptors at 20-1, clearly the biggest long shot of all. So I would assume that these six teams are the ones that we'll focus in on, and no one else really has a shot unless you tell me otherwise. Is it a chalky Nets? Is it a sleeping Celtics? Is it the great Sixers start? Which way do you think that the market goes here?
So I think that these odds are pretty interesting because I think that the Nets should be favored by more than they are And I think that for a couple of reasons. The first is their net rating stuff right now doesn't look that strong. They are only seventh in the NFL, in the NBA, in net rating. And I think that they get that ironed out a couple different ways. The first is they debuted it the other night. They just started Kevin Durant at center. They said, you know what, DeAndre Jordan, we know that you're bros with Kyrie and with KD, but we're not going to start you. We are just going to start Kevin Durant at center. We're going to start Kyrie and Harden, obviously, and then we're going to play Joe Harris and Bruce Brown at the other forward spots and kind of deploy them differently based on matchup. So I think that's the first step to the Nets solving some of their defensive problems and clearly becoming the best team in the Eastern Conference. But the other thing is, they really haven't had any chance to get any cohesion together, right? They had the game where Durant only played the second quarter because he was in there due to COVID contact tracing, and then he had to not play in the second half, and then he was in contact tracing, so he didn't play the next week, and now he's banged up again. And I think all of the craziness around the Nets is keeping them from being like, I mean, if I was kind of pricing this market, if FanDuel hired me and they were like, you know, just what do you think the Nets should be? I mean, I would make them a huge favorite for the Eastern Conference because in the playoffs, they're going to crush whoever they get matched up with. They are going to be a horrible matchup for the Bucks specifically because Durant is about the best defender you could ever dream up. If you just create a defender for Giannis in the lab and it would be Kevin Durant, like that's going to be the perfect guy to go toe-to-toe with Giannis. And the other thing is, I think that the Bucks are taking a huge amount of win equity out of this market, you know, sitting there at plus 240, plus 250. And I just don't think that's a good number for them at all. I think they are much closer to the 76ers in terms of quality of a team than they are to the Brooklyn Nets. So taking that position, that kind of makes this whole market plus EV. You know, if you think the Bucks should be closer to like plus 4 or plus 500, that means the 76ers look good. That means the Celtics look good. And I think you could even argue the Raptors as the most battle-tested team here. You know, just if you look at their core overall, that's a team that's won a title. They know how to win, and you would like them in the playoffs against any of these teams, I think.
Yeah, I think all fair points. I think a month from now, you'll see a significant change, and it's not a change that because the regular season is coming to an end, it's just that FanDuel and the books sort of have to protect themselves with a significant injury, and it's not just the Nets, it's every team. And so I think that's kind of why you see the markets here, and you don't wish this upon anybody, but if Harden was to be out for the season all of a sudden, you know, it changes the odds significantly there, and it would with Philly if, I mean, Embiid's in and out of the lineup anyway, but if Embiid was out, all of a sudden their market would change too. So it's like kind of protecting themselves. It would move everybody up and move one team down, and I think that's kind of why I have it. But I would tell you a month from now, I think that the last chance of value is probably now on something like that because it's going to change significantly. Less chance for an injury at the end of the season. Okay, Western Conference championship odds. Lakers are prohibitive favorites at plus 110. This is a little bit of a switch from last year. If you remember, this was flip-flop. The Clippers were favored and the Lakers were second. That did not work out. Utah has moved up very significantly from about 14 to 12 to 10, and now this week they're sitting at 6.5 to 1. Denver is 12 to 1, Dallas 24 to 1, and Phoenix all of a sudden popped up here because they played good basketball, Davis, at 24 to 1. So, I mean, there it is. It's like AD is out, so maybe that's the injury that opens the door up potentially for another team in the NBA. And I suppose that today is probably the day to do it because if we get the results that anything is more significant with Davis that we don't know about, that would change this market as well. So any dart throwing here on Phoenix or maybe thinking Utah can somehow score? I know Utah's going to win in the first round. They play very sound fundamental basketball. I worry, though, when they have to go up against some of the big guys as it gets closer.
I mean, if you are a non-emotional sports bettor and all you really care about is getting your money in good and you like when you win, but you don't sweat it that hard when you lose, I don't see how you're not betting the Utah Jazz right now. They are the number one team in net rating in the NBA, and they are by a significant factor. Their net rating per 100 possessions, 9.5 points better than their opposition. The number two team is the Clippers at +8. And, you know, I think there are some clear paths to the Jazz actually coming out of the Western Conference, and they are the Anthony Davis injury is more serious than we think right now, or he comes back too early and he gets re-injured. And then the Clippers, I mean, who I don't have to talk anyone into shorting the Clippers. The Clippers are a mess. You know, no one really believes in Paul George in the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard has the knee injury that, you know, limits his effectiveness on back-to-backs. We saw when games got compressed in the bubble last year that Kawhi just didn't have that same defensive intensity. He really has trouble getting lift on his jump shots. And if this Paul George injury, by the way, I mean, he has not played in a week and a half now. He's still banged up. No word on when he's coming back. I think that wear and tear on Kawhi in the regular season is going to be very bad for them come the playoffs time. So I am betting this Jazz number at plus 650. Now, I don't think that it's the best bet in the world. I don't even think it's particularly likely to win. But I do think if you can get the number one team in the NBA in net rating after, you know, a pretty good sample. I mean, we're sitting here at 30 games played for the Utah Jazz. And you can just lock that money in and hope to, you know, maybe you could even cash out on that money at some point. I do think it's a wager that you should be making.
All right, so Utah last year in the bubble played probably the best series, I would say, of the year last year. Maybe you disagree. You could tell me otherwise. When Utah played Denver in that series they played, is there a chance Phoenix can go toe-to-toe with any of these teams above with the way that they're playing with Booker?
So I think that Phoenix just has defensive problems that it's impossible to solve. So the first is, you know, they play a 5'8", 35-year-old point guard. And, Chris Paul used to be a super impactful perimeter defender. He just can't move quite as well. Booker, definitely a negative value defensive player. Ayton, really good offensive player, but not a rim protector. You know, just that does not shield around the rim the way that someone like Rudy Gobert does. You know, just not really able to limit shot attempts at the rim the way that you want your center to be able to. The team that I think is most interesting down the board in the Western Conference, it's got to be the Denver Nuggets at 12-1. The first reason being, you know, Nikola Jokic is just an incredible player. I mean, I think that Jokic probably deserves the MVP if we want to put it down to what would his team be without him. I think the Lakers would still be winning. I think that the Nets would still be winning without, you know, any of their stars. So I do think that Jokic should be getting people's MVP votes right now. But also the box that is the mystery box that is Michael Porter Jr. When you just watch him play and you don't look at the stat sheet, Michael Porter Jr. looks like a guy who should be a first team all NBA player. You know, he does it all on offense. He can make any shot. He never loses the ball, but for whatever reason, it has not shown up in the box score yet. And I do think that the uncapped potential of what Porter Jr. can be on the offensive side of the ball keeps the Nuggets ceiling as a team super high, even if their floor is not as high, because Michael Porter Jr. can also be one of the worst players on the floor, depending on the day.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, I think, in the West, and maybe the Davis injury is something that changes the Lakers. We're just going to have to see, and if we get any news on that, of course, it's pretty early in the West Coast, so if we get any news on that, we'll let you know. How cold is it today, Davis, by the way, Midwest? What are you looking at? How cold is it today?
Oh, it's terrible, man. I have two dogs, and taking these dogs outside is literally one of the most selfless things I have ever done. It feels like negative 22 outside, according to my phone this morning. Just could not be more bitter and miserable outside of my house right now.
I know, man. I know. Like, do you see what's going on in Texas? Like, nobody could, like, leave the house? Like, in Houston, like, power's out everywhere? Like,
It's only 20 degrees there and everything is shut down. Imagine if it was actually freezing there.
True. Fair point. Well, as I look out my window, I was on the golf course earlier today. Brett doesn't want to hear that, but and you don't want to hear that either, I'm sure, Davis. But back in time for the show. Got to do the show live, that's for sure. All right, coming up next, Andrew Benintendi moves to the Kansas City Royals. Davis and I will talk about what we can expect from a fantasy perspective. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Our producer, James LTN, says the Royals have a shot this year. It's probably a good time for those of you who believe that to change your show here to something else. I'm just kidding, James. I hope the Royals are good for you, but it has been a long time since they have been relevant. But they did make a big move over the weekend in acquiring outfielder Andrew Benintendi, who fell out of favor extremely in Boston. In fact, everybody that I spoke to thought it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to get traded somewhere. It ends up going from Boston to Kansas City, and Dayton Moore, no stranger to building championships, he did it with the Royals many years ago, said that his postseason experience and what he brings to the table is the reason why they got him.
You know, been a part of, playoffs and he's a proven winner and gets on base, does a lot of things that, you need players to do in your lineup if you're going to win. And so, he fits really well with our current group and a lot of the things that we were able to execute, this offseason.
Davis, I know that you've played fantasy baseball and you've watched baseball forever, so you're no stranger to the hot prospect game and performance at a high level game to now what in the world? Because that's kind of the story with Andrew Benintendi. And Davis, when you look at his numbers from 2020, literally hide your eyes. This dude hit 103 in limited time. He was hurt. His OPS below 500. And even his 2019 numbers, by the way, were not that inspiring. But 2018, 2017, Davis, in fantasy, he was like your number one outfielder. And he's very young. But for whatever reason, things just went super sour for him in Boston. And I can't say it was the pressure, because he won a World Series there. So it wasn't that. His performance completely went downhill. And some of this narrative is that, oh, he's going to go to Kansas City and it's all less pressure and he's going to just get a chance to be him and all of that good stuff. But I got to tell you, he performed very well under pressure. He made one of the best catches in Boston's postseason against Houston, probably ended up helping him win the World Series. So a little perplexing for me the last couple of years of him. How about you?
I mean, I got to say, so first off, I'm like a real Royals fan. Like, I remember Unieski, Betancourt, and Chris Getz, and just, the 50-win teams, just, they were so bad while I was growing up. It was crazy how bad they are. And then they kind of changed their organizational philosophy. They start drafting guys who are just super fast. They have the 2014, yeah, 2015 teams that gave me some of my best sports memories ever. I love this trade by Dayton Moore. They give up Khalil Lee, who is a real prospect and does definitely fit that organizational mold of a super toolsy player. At his absolute best, he would have been a five-tool guy, could have been a center fielder who stole bases and hit, 15, 20 home runs a year. But I feel like this is a bad trade by the Red Sox. And you don't want to accuse the Red Sox of making bad trades, because we know they are so analytically driven in their front office. But all the sample that we've gotten of Benintendi is that he's kind of like the perfect corner outfielder in today's game. 2020 in 2017, was a 2 WAR player then. So in his very first full-time player, he was average. Then 4.4 WAR in 2018, 2 WAR again in 2019. Has basically hit at about 270. His career OBP, 353. I want to say that they panicked off of the small sample last year. I mean, only 52 plate appearances for Andrew Benintendi last year. I don't really understand from the Red Sox perspective what they're doing here, because they didn't even get Khalil Lee. Khalil Lee went to the Mets. So I have to say, I mean, maybe they were just trying to shed his money. And it's not like he's owed a crazy man. I think his contract is $5.5 million for this upcoming season. So, I would love if we had, someone from the Red Sox explaining what the thought process was here. But I love this trade for the Royals and the third team involved. I think the Mets made the best out of this deal, getting Khalil Lee for basically some nothing prospects. And Khalil Lee could be their center fielder for the next decade if things work out.
Yeah, look, Lee is going to run. There's no doubt. And I think that in a deep NFBC league, I had Khalil Lee last year thinking, and this is before the league was shut down and there was only 60 games. At that point, I knew it was a bad pick. But it's not that I disagree with you, but the Red Sox wanted him gone. Like, there were other teams involved also. I know Miami was a strong possibility as well. And everyone knew that they were going to trade him. So someone's going to be right here. Either Dayton Moore is going to be right, or it's going to be Boston. It's usually the way things work. One team is right, one team is wrong. But they were hell-bent on moving this player for whatever reason that is. And I got to tell you, the last 2 years combined, 2019, 2020, you mentioned two WAR, which is fine. But I think he's got to get closer to what he was in 18 and 17. We'll see if him going to Kansas City ends up making that happen. Their lineup is definitely better now. They have Carlos Santana with Merrifield and Soler and some other players as well. All right, Mets over the weekend, still making moves, still trying to upgrade their team. Their general manager, Zach Scott, did a little media Zoom over the weekend, so I thought we would bring that to you. One of the more interesting players on the Mets, who, if they add one more player, could be out of some playing time, maybe could even be out of some playing time now with all the acquisitions that they made. And that is, of course, Dominic Smith, who had the nice 2020, and their GM, Zach Scott, basically fell short of saying that Dom Smith was a starter in the outfield, but said that he's certainly been working on getting to that point.
Dom obviously has been a very good hitter. He has the fact that he's moved from first out to the outfield gives him more versatility. I know it's something that he wants to continue to work on, and that's something that Tony Tarasco will be working on with him, has already started working with him and talking through those things.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at Dominic Smith, and let's take a look at his numbers last year, and Davis, there's no question, in 50 games, he put up some of the best numbers on the Mets, right? 10 home runs, 42 RBIs, and he's being drafted pretty high in the NFBC. I mean, 105 is no slouch there. The only question has got to be playing time. I think that Zach Scott's playing a little coy with that. Davis, going into spring training, they're going to want to see him play a little bit more in the outfield. But if you're telling me Kyle Schwarber's playing left, I got Dominic Smith playing left too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what's interesting there is he might end up being the strong side of a platoon because they could play Albert Armora Jr., who they just assigned as a free agent. And also, Jonathan Villar has played outfield in the past as well. Former Miami Marlin. He was there for a cup of coffee last year. And Villar is kind of like the classic good fantasy baseball, bad real, well, not bad, but average, you know, real baseball player.
You got it right.
Yeah. So I guess what's interesting to me in terms of Dominic Smith's NFBC ADP is I think you have to move his plate appearance expectation from like 560 down to maybe like 490 or 500, because there's just a lot of ways that he can get squeezed for playing time now. Especially, I mean, because what'll happen with VR is he will have a hot run. You know, VR will have a run where he hits like 3 home runs in 5 games, steals some bases, and the Mets are like, we got it. Well, we got to get his bat in the lineup. And if there's no National League DH, the most obvious place to play him is to stick him in the outfield, where his mediocre defense, you know, plays a little bit easier than it does there in the middle infield. And by the way, Almora Jr. is like not some terrible player. Right. Like, I think he is he's a passable major league player. And he also, you know, kind of does the same things that VR does. And so basically, you're not going to get Dom Smith versus lefties, I think, would be the Mets plan. It's just when there's a lefty on the mound, Dom Smith Jr. is a bench bat. And guys like that in the top 100 of ADP, like you got to get 600 plate appearances from those guys if you're taking them over a starting pitcher, I think.
Yeah, and not only that, but Almora, the other thing that he did in Chicago, he's going to do it in New York too. He's going to get in the game in the seventh inning, and Dom Smith's going to sit, and he's going to play the outfield as a defensive replacement. And that is basically, I mean, over the course of the week, that's losing 3 or 4 plate appearances from a player that that right now has an ADP of 105. Let's take a look at players that are in that same range, Davis, if you don't mind here. And we have Charlie Blackmon, whose ADP is 90. He's one of the remaining guys in Colorado, of course. Austin Meadows at 94, Dom Smith, there he is at 105, Dylan Moore, who came on a little bit with Seattle, 113, Eddie Rosario now with the Indians, 114, and then the Byron Buxton conversation every year is more or less the same, Davis. We're always waiting for that one Buxton season. So any thoughts on these 6 players here, over Smith, below Smith, about the same?
I mean, you know, like most delusional fantasy baseball players, I just am. I'm looking at Byron Buxton and I'm saying, yep, we got to do it. I mean, I look at his 2017 season, 511 plate appearances, 16 home runs, 29 stolen bases with a .253 batting average. And I'm saying, get that guy on my team every single day. You know, if he can go 2020 with a .250 batting average and actually locks down that leadoff spot as opposed to batting ninth for the Minnesota Twins, right, who have a disgustingly good hitting lineup. You know, I mean, they got Cruz, they got Mitch Garver, one of the best hitting catchers. They have Josh Donaldson when he can stay healthy. Like, they are such a good offensive lineup. It's been their pitching that's held them back as an organization the last couple of years, and they play in that AL Central where no one has any pitching. You know, Buxton is going to get a lot of juicy matchups, but then also at the top of this list, Charlie Blackmon as well, another guy that I really like drafting just because I love to draft guys who get those home games in cores. You know, I'm going to be taking shots on Garrett Hampson, Ryan McMahon, Raimel Tapia. Like, I just am going to be drafting those guys all year because 300 plate appearances over the course of the year in Coors Field is worth, you know, 225 plate appearances elsewhere because of how much it boosts run scoring. And I guess the weird thing about Blackmon is he's totally stopped running the last 2 years, only four steals the last two seasons. But, you know, I mean, very hard to project steals, obviously, but if you even get 10 steals from Blackmon and 30 home runs and then all the associated run production that comes in cores, you're talking about a guy who earns, you know, top 15 outfielder value probably.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting older, so I mean, the prediction the last 2 years is that his age was going to start holding him back, and I think people just look at the steals and correlate it to that, but he's more or less otherwise been the same player. I don't think that he changes all that much without Arenado. We have seen, as you mentioned, so many offensive players go through cores, and the only issue with that has been they just have not settled in on any of those players. You mentioned Tapia and Hampson and McMahon. I would mention Brendan Rodgers too. It's just a matter of, will the organization play the young guys, or will they go out and get Ian Desmond or Matt Kemp? It's like, that's the problem. You know, that's what they've been doing the last couple of years, of playing these guys. And Blackmon, I think, is heads and tails above all of these guys who we just discussed. And I'm not going back to Buxton again. How many times can I do this and hope? I understand where you're coming from, Davis, and in NFBC, a league winner, you know, like, it makes sense. But any other league, I don't know. Financially speaking, I got to make a better investment, I think. Okay, coming up, we're going to wrap up this first hour of fantasy sports today. We'll have our headlines coming up in hour number two. Also, NBA slate tonight, very interesting. And when we come back, I'll ask Davis about this one big game tonight over on FanDuel. Boy, Philadelphia taking on Utah. You talk about the two arguably hottest teams playing in the NBA against each other. Look I had was, I think Utah minus 6.5 in this one. So we'll hit on that next, coming up on Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Craig Mish along with Davis Maddock. We got plenty more to come, so make sure you stay on the grid. We're back in just 2 minutes, so don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We got our headlines coming up here at the top of the hour. Craig Mish along with Davis Maddock here on Fantasy Sports Today. Real quick, Davis, a quick opinion on a game, and then I want to hit on a college football note here. Utah now up to 7.5 against Philly tonight. I guess actually down from 8, it looks like, here on FanDuel. 7, 7.5, 8, maybe because of Embiid playing or not. Any opinion real quick on this one tonight?
I would lean the Utah side there just because we're riding the wave. You know, some of these highlight plays that Utah have done, like, are unbelievable. So I'm riding the wave with them right now.
Okay, cool. Also, it looks like former Auburn head coach Gus Malzahn going to be the new head coach at UCF. So, Davis, they go from Frost to Heupel to Malzahn, who, by all accounts, I mean, I suppose he had a pretty successful career at the head coach as the head coach of Auburn, but this was not the standard offense for Auburn, that's for sure, as he steps into UCF. No doubt about that.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what the plan would be there, because those SEC coaches, I feel like they have such a hard time transitioning to running the air raid. So it'll be interesting if he tries to keep running that, or if they try and implement something new, you know, something a little bit more ground and pound SEC style football there. I don't know how well that'll go over with the boosters.
No, and it's really interesting because it's like, if it's not broke, why fix it? And I know that UCF certainly feels like they should have won or could have won a championship a couple of years ago. But by all accounts, I mean, they're pretty much an 8-9 win team, even in their conference. And it's a fair question to see whether or not Auburn continues to just play this wide open. UCF plays this wide open spread offense with Malzahn, who has been known as a pretty good coach defensively and a really good offensive line coach. A lot of good running backs have come out of Auburn as well. So curious to see that. All right, our headlines are coming up next. We'll preview the NBA games tonight, little college basketball discussion as well. Adam Ronis will join us, and we'll go over the full slate on the NBA tonight and also talk some fantasy baseball as well. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid. I'm Craig Mitch, along with Davis Maddock. Our first hour is in the books, but if you're watching us live, stay tuned. We'll be back. 2 minutes, don't go away.